Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
To the sweet sounds of Kevin Bloody Wilson, it's Hump Day with Swanee and friend Samantha Riches. And
Hello.
Yeah. Do you want a water as he's pouring it out? Because our man is so tired after such a huge week of talking to the people. Anzac week is his busiest. We've had to get another one.
And grand final week.
Matthew Richardson. Thanks for joining us, Richo.
Good to be here.
Two Richos in one room. Welcome. Thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. I haven't seen Ralphie for ages.
It's been ages, absolutely.
Back the old footy show days.
Footy show days, where your sister works. Samantha. Yes. Only Samantha's a champion.
Is your sister called Samantha?
Yes, she is.
Two Samantha Richos. Yes.
Samantha Jane.
There you go.
She worked with Ralph at the footy show, and it was a long time ago now, Ralphie.
Absolutely. But you now... You're almost a decade into being a full-time media person. How long have you been a full-time media person, mainstream, Dane?
I don't know. Am I one?
I wouldn't say so.
Part-time.
Very, very, very casual.
So when Matthew was good enough to say you'll do this show, I get this direct message back from him. Ralphie, what's the flow of this pod, mate? Can you send details to? We're 2.5 years in. How often have you asked anything about what we're doing?
Never.
Have
never.
That's a professional.
Yeah, well.
I just wanted to know if I needed to prepare or do anything.
I haven't prepared in 2.5 years, so.
You can get away with it, Swan.
You're a very good performer, Matthew. I'm sure you'll be fine.
And you know, followed up with, no controversy, please.
No, I've got kids to pay for now, guys. I need my jobs.
Same. I need a job.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of which, what's the kid situation at the moment? Because we don't do really in-depth stuff, two little girls,
3.5 and 10 months old, and already got me wrapped around their fingers, that's for sure. Particularly the 3.5-year-old. She does not listen to one word I say. It literally is the truth.
Perfect. Yeah.
When do they start getting fun?
Because yes, good point.
Because I've got a 10-week-old and he's like a plant. You just feed him and watch him grow.
Yeah.
So I might as well just stick him in the corner with the rest of him.
You're useless at the moment, Swanee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Useless. I reckon my 10-month-old, she's like, I go in there now and get her in the morning out of the cot. She actually responds to me now.
Okay,
she
recognises 10 months, me. Yeah.
I reckon that was about the 8-month mark. So,
all right, so yeah, what am I?
You've got 4 months left.
Up my sleeve. Sweet. Yeah. Bit of Albion time left. Yeah. Bit of getting away time before that happens. Yeah.
And then once they do start, you've got a little boy though. Yeah,
I've got a boy. Yeah.
So you'll be all right, but the girls just do not listen at all.
Already?
The other morning I walked down the stairs and my 3.5-year-old sitting there having her rice bubbles and she's got the iPad there watching it. And I said, good morning, darling. How are you going? What are you watching there on your iPad? She goes, don't talk to me, Dad. Just put her hand out with a stop sort of sign. I went, all right, you don't talk to me later when you want a lollipop or a Freddo frog.
But also, she doesn't listen, but you're also going to have zero say in anything. She's going to ask for something, your butter's just going to melt, and you're going to go, yes, darling, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to that?
I sort of don't mind. Puppy, it. I sort of half don't mind being bossed around a bit.
Yeah, by the girls. Yeah. You're literally going to have no say in anything.
We go again.
That's the question, Dane, isn't it?
10 months is a little early to ask that, though, isn't it?
Well, oh, I'm 46, mate. I don't want to be that old dude at the primary school, which I already am, like 46. So if I go again now, I'm starting to get towards 50 for the next one. I'm like, yeah, I'd say no, but my wife would say, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm not going to have a say in that either. So
well, you've got half a say. Yeah.
Kind of.
Bite down on a towel or something like that.
There's a crunch time coming there, I think.
Yeah.
And you got being a COVID new dad too.
Yeah, that was pretty tough, actually. Yeah, so my second one was born in June last year, and that was right in the middle of the lockdown. So literally I was the only one allowed in the hospital, so we couldn't have the grandparents around. And then when we got home, it was, you know, full lockdown. So, yeah, it was pretty hard for Jen just with the new baby at home. And I was still going – I had a little bit of work on with the footy coming back. So, yeah, it was tough for them, but just more so not being able to have visitors and see your newborn. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And we got through those extra hands of help as well.
Yeah. The first few weeks probably wasn't a bad thing because, you know, when you get everyone coming around, you're trying to settle in and – sort of the doorbell rings, you're like, oh no, you got to go again. But yeah, after a few weeks, it would have been nice to have a few people pop in. But anyway, it is what it is.
So just to broaden the conversation a bit for our past week, how have you coped, Dane, over Anzac Day? Because I know you're so busy talking to the people.
So busy.
Who's more busy? Is it you or Tony Shaw? Because
Tony's a good operator. He's a good operator.
Selflessly giving.
Well, Anzac Day week and Grand Final week are the two sort of most special weeks, fucking not because of the game, because of the week leading. Yeah, exactly. Because of the things around it. But yeah, it's a good week. I was lucky enough. Obviously, I wasn't lucky enough. I deserve the two medals.
Spot on.
I also see your highlights reel more than I see the news.
I've become a much better player during Anzac Day. I was incredible. But yeah, it was a good week. Mind you, when I do say nothing's for nothing, but the footy club, I give a good solid 2.5 hours at the footy club, and that was. Yeah. For nothing.
A solid 2.5.
So that was good. And then I had some sports bet stuff, which I'm obliged to do because they pay me.
Contracted.
Yeah, contracted. Yeah. Which, and they obviously, Richo does a bit of stuff for them. They're very fun to work for. And then had, what did I have? I think I had five.
Talking to the people?
Yeah. Giving back functions. Yeah. Went to the game. Obviously had a couple at the game. Then hosted the sports bet box, which is a tough gig.
That's fun though.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a real tough gig sitting there, drinking and eating, watching the footy. So
did you have to wear a collar? Because I know you don't have any collars.
No, not in the box. I did do a couple of functions though, in like the members' rooms and I was dressed in a hat, hoodie and jeans. And
did they pull you up at all? They're pretty strict there normally.
Yeah, but I had a guy walked me through over there, so I was okay. But
also, he's Dane Swan. His highlights reel is on the big screen.
Well, because now with the COVID, you can only go in the gate where your seat is. And so the box, my box was across the other side of the ground where so a guy had to come and give me a lanyard, I think that's the term. Why the fuck's it called a lanyard?
I don't know.
But that with my credentials, and I had a media pass, so I guess you could say I'm a part of the media.
Did you see the front bar during the week?
No, man, I was actually out giving back.
You were giving back. Did you see it when they showed the Richmond players walk into the room and nowadays even players need the pass. Dusty, g'day.
No pass. See, that's the face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's funny, just on Tony Shaw. So I work with him on Sundays on 3RW and we're sitting in the box. We're doing the pre-game, you know, the build-up, Anzac Day, big build-up, and we're all talking. And I sort of turned around and I'm talking down to one of the other commentators there and I said something back to Shorey. I turned around and he'd gone. I'm like, where's Shorey gone? You know, and he didn't come back for 15 minutes. He ducked off while we were on air and did a quick cashy in one of the dining rooms there.
He's not bad, is he? He's not bad.
He's the best.
Here's the thing. So when you walk into a club as a young player, you learn from the older players. Are you learning from the older media performers how to cut a few corners and maybe do some things like that along
those
lines?
Shorey is very good at it, but probably the other one, and it seems to be a Collingwood thing. It's funny.
Coleman medalist?
Brian Taylor. he is timed to the minute, particularly Grand Final Week. And he found out a few years ago on Grand Final Week that, you know, a lot of functions in and around the city, if you were driving your car around, you couldn't get between one and the other quick enough, you know, because he's got one every hour for the whole day, right? So he got a scooter so he could get to and from the cashies quicker. That's the ATO's not listening.
Best thing about him, though, is once he gets up on stage, you don't say another word because he just takes the mic in. Yeah. You can't get a word in him if you wanted to. Yeah. If you had some funny to say, he just takes over and, mate, in and out. I tell you what, he's great up on stage, but he doesn't give the people much.
No, he's not a man of the people.
He's not. When he gets off stage, he doesn't throw too many photos out. Just straight in, straight
he's,
out.
He's in the green room. He's up on stage, and then he's back in the green room and out.
Yeah,
he straight doesn't out. Mingle.
No, he does not.
I went to a 50th 2 years ago, and they're doing the, you know, the usual just chat, and there's probably 100 people upstairs. Anyway, they said, and let's welcome Leo Sayer. And Leo Sayer, the great 70s and 80s singer, comes out, sings five songs. During his last song, he's walking down the stairs handing the microphone. Gone. BT would be proud of that, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would. Wasn't Sam Newman like that? He would just come on stage and then straight off, refuse to talk to anyone.
When I first worked with them at 96 in my first year at the footy show, Doug Hawkins saying, you got to watch the way Sam works. He walks in and just goes, where's the envelope? Not even hello to the person organising it. We haven't got it yet, Sam. I'll be in the car.
Yeah. I haven't got to the stage of – I was watching some old YouTube clips the other night on Elvis Presley. He would literally – the limousine would pull up next to the stage, right, in the stadium, out of the limo, straight up on stage, and then when he came off, straight back in the limo and out.
It's not bad, is it?
Only spent the hour that he had to.
So as an ex-player, so was that your first time as an ex-player really wandering around the Collingwood rooms as part of your filming for him during the week?
Yeah,
and what did
it
feel like? Is it a spare dick or?
Yes and no. I didn't know half. I wouldn't know three quarters of the players now. Yeah. Like, I know to look at them, but all these young kids, I was like, fuck all these kids. Are they like AIS kids or something like that? Like, just completely.
How young do they look, too?
Oh, mate, it's incredible. And some of the haircuts. Some of the haircuts on the kids playing AFL these days, like, thank God they're playing AFL because they no chance they'll be getting a root out otherwise. with some of these haircuts they're playing, thank goodness they play AFL, let me tell you.
You have that conversation with 3NW at times? Yeah, no, type of band?
Not quite to that extent. Yeah,
but
I just wouldn't have rolled a haircut like that with some of my coaches, though.
Yeah, and not day one too, rolling in. Like, but footy's obviously changed from when we play. It was like speak when you're spoken to, just bum head down, bum up, do the right thing. And then like even when I've started playing towards the end of my career, like you're being like a leading teams kind of meeting. And some first year player, you hardly know his name yet, gets up and goes, oh, now Dan, I think you should probably be working a bit harder. You're working a bit harder. Like,
did you struggle with that?
Did I struggle with it?
Yeah, I did.
I was like, excuse me, pardon me? So who the fuck are you?
Yeah. I remember my second last year. Like,
you
I'm,
did not.
Yes. You can't have a 17-year-old who has literally stepped foot in, and you can tell if they're going to be any good.
Yeah.
If you're the number one pick in, like, Chris Judge just walked in the room, fair enough, but when you pick 78 or you've just come off the rookie list and you're going to put your hand up and tell a legend of the club that he probably needs to pull his finger out.
I'll get that.
Yeah, righto. You're not going to last long, mate.
I couldn't believe that.
How'd you go with it?
Well, I struggled with that too because, you know, I did some things I shouldn't have done as a player and I might have broken a few rules, but I thought I did a lot right as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember one of the first leading teams sessions we had, a young kid got up and he was on the sup list, I reckon. He wasn't even on the list.
Do you remember his name?
No.
Do we know what he's doing now?
I didn't know what his name was then.
Shouldn't even be in the meeting.
Yeah, and he sort of said something to me about not running through to a cone at training. Like, Richo's not pushing through to the cones. And I'm like, come off it, mate. Is this a joke? Is this April Fool's Day? Like, seriously.
I remember, I think I told it on here, one of the days me and Pendles were having, like, we got, might have been pre-season or something, the Bucks goes, all right, you can go off. I was like, we just did the warm-up or, you know, we did something, so we'll just go on. We'd had enough for the day pretty much. They said, all right, you two boys, you've had a...
And you've done enough time to earn that.
Exactly, you've done enough career. Yeah. One of the first year draftees come up the Bucks and try to walk off with us. Dead set true. And
thought he'd done enough.
Yeah, and Bucks is like, mate, where are you going? He goes, oh, well, Swanee and Pendles are going off. Why can't I? Well, I had the nerve, legitimately had the nerve to say, well, I'm going off too. And he was like, have you seen what them two have done in their career? Yeah. just wait another 10 years and see what you can do before. It's like, they just, but it's also these young kids, when they come in from under 18s, they just get told they're the best. And we got fucking smacked when we were under 18s and when we first got into the league.
I didn't talk to anyone in my first year.
Exactly, yeah.
Just as you said, come to training, get it done and get home. I just didn't even know. So much so that the first Mad Monday, this is how naive I was in my first year. I trained 93? Hard. 93.
Yep.
I'm sitting at work because you had to work back then as well. I'm sitting at work out in Mount Waverley at Lendlease Advisor Services, it was called, making coffees and doing that sort of stuff. And the phone rang and it was Dale Waitman, who was our legend at the time. And he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "We're all at Lord Jim's in Fitzroy for a Mad Monday." I didn't even know that it was on. That's how removed I was from the things. Wow. Yeah. So I soon learned that you go to Mad Monday every year.
But so you probably wouldn't have put your hand up then and told him that he wasn't running through to the cone.
No, definitely not.
I think it's also these young kids are getting told that they're incredible from their age of 10 and no winning and losing. So I think they come in with big egos and and sometimes they seem to be brought down a peg.
Well, that's true, because even like there's draft shows and things like that where they get exposure that you wouldn't have dreamt of getting in Tassie.
They're already in the newspaper, weren't they? You know, articles and getting interviews on the news. Whereas I remember back when our draft was on in 92, you sort of didn't even know you were drafted. It wasn't on TV or radio. You had to wait for someone to ring you and say, "Oh, you've actually been drafted."
You weren't at schoolies getting drafted?
No, that's a good story.
I just need to check something with you. It just reminded me. So recently you two did a gig with Wayne Carey. Dane said that Duck had no problem talking about his favourite subject and you two barely got a word in. Is that true or not true?
Yeah. No, he's... Geez, he was on fire that day.
He's not bad, especially when he starts doing the old tap you on the arm to make sure you're listening to his story. So he looks around. If you just break eye contact for half a second, he just grabs you and goes, hey, and just make sure you listen back into this one.
He doesn't mind his own stories.
Does he what?
Though, when you start telling one of your stories, he switches off.
Exactly.
Listen to your stories.
I've got to say, I'm up here for a reason. I'm going to try and get some, and he just takes over halfway, mid-sentence into my stories. I'm like, right, and then he's got something better. He's a real one-upperer at a story. Like, if you've done something, he's done something better. But anyway,
I was going to say,
you pretty much get up there and you sit there like a spare dick for 40 minutes and Wayne does it all, and thank you. I think he tried to snip me 20% on the way out for doing that.
He left early too, Doug.
He's not bad at it either, Wayne.
He gets away with it.
So how did you cope with that transition? Dane said he hadn't been there for a few years and it's weird walking around the club. And you've been employed by the club
It's sort of weird though. Yeah, as you say, I wouldn't – because of COVID last year. So I did go into the club once a week on a Monday to do the podcast. But we were doing the podcast up in the old Jack Dyer stand and the players are all over in the other – so you wouldn't see anyone. Yeah. So I probably haven't really seen any of the players for 2 or 3 years now. So, yeah, the new draftees, I mean, they wouldn't even know who I am either. Like, talking to some of these young kids at clubs after games and that when we're back in the rooms on Saturday night, we're down in the Melbourne rooms, and I swear they're looking over at you going, who are these old blokes? You know, they've got no idea.
Now, speaking of which, so I was watching TV, obviously pretty happy as a Demon supporter, and they had Max Gorn.
They get ahead of themselves.
Oh, okay.
A couple of wins.
A lot of cancellations up for Mount Buller over the last next couple of months.
But for the seven Melbourne people who aren't Melbourne supporters watching afterwards, tell the Channel 7 boys
stitch up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stitch up. I think they've gone out to all the clubs at the start of the year and done some interviews and whatever. And for whatever reason, they found out Max Gorn was a Richmond supporter as a kid. So Max then tells this story that they've recorded before the season, where he came down to Richmond training and he was lining up to get an autograph. He had his little Richmond hat and he's standing at the end of the race. And I was one of the last guys out onto the track. And as I come past, he sort of said, "Oh, Richo, can you sign this?" And I said, "Look, mate, I've got to get out on the track. I'll sign it after training." And he reckons he waited around for the whole session. And then
you asshole.
I thought I was better than this. I did. And he reckons after training, he's still standing in the same spot. I've just run straight past him up into the room. So he said he hated me from that moment on. He said Brendan Gale was his favourite after that. So So
it's
yeah.
funny how much the kids really buy into it. It's cute, isn't it? And yeah. and then you see these days in particular, now that like, well, there was photographs a while back, but you're seeing kids now that were like playing in AFL Auskick and now they're playing on the MCG, and they've got photos with yeah. people like yourself, like Max Gorn. If you'd have stopped for a photo, yeah, he might have had one with you. Do you know what I mean?
I felt pretty bad. But it's sort of right though. I remember as a kid going to watch the English cricket team, came to Tassie, to Devonport, and we didn't get anyone in Devonport. Not a lot of Devonport. But we actually had England v the West Indies at the Devonport Oval, right? That was a massive deal in Devonport. So we went down to the nets the day before, me and a couple of schoolmates, and we're watching these English batsmen in the nets and for about an hour, and there was hardly anyone there. And this guy, Bill Athey, I remember his name, he walked out of the nets, and we had our autograph books and the little mini cricket bats and that, and Bill walked past and I said, oh, Bill, would you be able to sign my bat? And he just totally brushed me. Didn't even acknowledge that I was there and walked into the rooms. And I hated him instantly. Hated his guts. And the next day I went to the game and all I wanted to see was Bill Athey get knocked over. And sure enough, Malcolm Marshall bowled him first ball. I was absolutely pumped. So now I know how Maxie, I know how Max felt that day.
You would have been a real big giver of family aid school holiday
at the clinics
and stuff. Like you would have been first there, last to leave, kind of guy.
I tried to, Swanee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, I've got to stick up for you because during my footy show days, which was obviously part of Richo, you and Crawford, I couldn't believe how generous you are to the people. And is that what you're saying?
I actually try to remember that Bill Athey thing, but obviously I didn't remember that when I saw Max Gorn.
And it kind of sucks for you too that it turns out to be a really good footballer now who's quite a public figure as well. Yeah. So that story is just going to keep
going. I reckon every footballer's got one of them.
Yeah, they have.
Like,
You can't get everyone. You're going to miss someone somewhere.
Exactly.
Well, it's the maths, isn't it? Because one person wants 10 seconds of your time, but if there's 10,000 people there, eventually that catches up.
Yeah.
So you said growing up in Tassie and like Dane, you had a bit of expectation about you. Dane's dad, obviously, a VFA legend. Yours is a Richmond Premiership legend. What type of expectation did you have on yourself when you started off, and did you feel that media sort of pressure?
Always, you know, some guys say they just want to play one game. I reckon that can be a cliche at times. I didn't want to play one game. Who wants to play one game?
I didn't want to play any.
Geez, you went over and above the expectations.
I was teetering on the edge for a while there.
You would have had a lot more fun. Do you reckon you would have had more fun or less if you hadn't played as many games as you did?
Nah, I would have had less fun because playing
wouldn't
more
have
games.
Any money,
yeah, so I was going to say, give me the ability to have more fun. Yeah, absolutely. So I would have had fun, but not as to the level of fun you can have when you're traveling around the world and you're.
It would have been Bonnie Doon, not
Bates. Yeah, exactly. Down to Shepparton. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I wanted to play a couple hundred games. I sort of had that about me, but expectation. I found with my old man playing at Richmond, you know, some, and he wasn't. Dad wasn't a superstar. He was just a solid player. Played in a premiership, but. I got to the club and I felt it actually felt more comfortable because people knew Dad. There were still some old timers around, some of the old trainers and people like that that knew Dad. So it sort of made me feel welcome. So I didn't feel pressure. I actually enjoyed it, yeah.
Did you get down to the club much as a kid when your dad was playing there? So
because we grew up in Tassie. Dad moved to Tassie after he finished playing for Richmond. Right. So we grew up there. So we come over on school holidays a little bit.
May I ask why?
To coach?
No, why? Oh, to coach, yeah. Okay.
For 2 years.
Yeah.
And
did your dad spend down in Tassie?
My dad went down to Tassie, yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
Which town?
Fuck if I know.
Billy was a Melbourne Metro boy, though.
Yeah. So he was Carlton under 19s.
Yeah.
And he says this is the biggest regret of his footballing career is that he was down there and then they were playing all the kids from the country and all that in front of him.
Yeah.
And he walked in and told the coach to get fucked and left.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he said that's the biggest regret of his life. But I actually think that was the greatest footballing decision he ever made.
Yeah.
Because if he had have continued to play to Carlton, I would have went father, son there.
That's a good point.
And thank fuck I didn't. So I went to Carlton. But then he obviously had a legendary career. Yeah, it's always about me. Come on. It's not his podcast. So, yeah, but then he obviously, you know, he's got the league record for the VFA, which will never be broken because that league's fucked now.
Did you used to go and watch the VFA or were you too young?
Yeah, no, I was there, but they recognised just to run around the shed, like just carry on. I was like six or something. Yeah. Like when he kicked the winning goal, I was six. So I was just, I don't know, I missed it. I was in the back just playing with all the rest of the kids.
So I could ask Richard about what his influence his dad was. Could you just say that story again about when your dad tried to be a bit overly influential on you out in the field?
Oh, well, that is the biggest influence on my footballing career. But one of the times I think he realised the aggressive approach probably wasn't for me, because I was playing down at Westie and he was yelling at me from the boundary. For whatever reason, I didn't want to cop it, so apparently I sat down, crossed my legs, put my fingers in my ears for like a minute or two while the ball went around me, and then I think they realised that probably there's a better approach to getting Dane to do something.
It's not the way to get the best. Yeah,
do you reckon exactly. Mick would have had that footage when it came to coaching you?
Oh, do you reckon I thought I'd done that on Anzac Day? So Mick, old Mick used to run out and tell me to do was pull me socks up, and like the runner would come out and said, Dane, Mick says, if you can't play like football, at least look like one. Yeah, yeah. And pull your socks. I reckon three, four times a game. And then I got obviously good enough where he didn't have to bother me with that. But like, that's what, I'll be walking up the race, Sonic, pull your socks. Like, he was relentless on me. I was like, fuck off.
Well, that was old school, wasn't it?
The
old man said that.
Yeah.
Said, if you want to play like a footballer, you got to look like one. Sat down with my jumper tucked in, socks up, and I had to nugget me boots the day before the game. Boots had to be shiny. But yeah, my dad was probably a bit dissimilar to that. He didn't tell me how to play at all.
Yeah.
And I actually wanted him to say something sometimes. But one day I got him. We had a high school game in Devonport, and I gave a 50-metre penalty away. And my coach took me off the ground, and we didn't have many good players in the team.
We were always a star junior, because the first person I was at Collingwood.
This is school footy, so probably in the school team. Yeah. I was the best in the school team. With Benny Harrison, who played at Richmond as well, he was in the same team. And the coach took me off for the 50, and I said, mate, if you don't put me straight back on, I'd say, I'm done. I'm not playing the rest of the game. And he said, no, go and sit down. You can have a spell. You know, that's undisciplined. I said, I'm done. So I went and got me bag out of the rooms. Yeah. And my dad was parked. You know, they used to park the cars. It was in the third quarter. And my old man had the car parked on the wing, you know, the grounds, suburban grounds. So I'm walking around to the car to get in the car to watch the rest of the game. And as I got closer, I could see my old man's head.
Just steaming
and red. And as I got to the car, he said, you get back over there now, you apologise to the coach, and don't ever do that again. And I went, oh, that's the only time he ever said anything to me. So,
how was the apology?
Yeah, I went back round, tail between my legs, and he made me sit on the pine till three-quarter time.
How'd you go in the last?
Probably got a few kicks.
Yeah, I imagine.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. So when you started at the Tigers, was John Northey the coach here?
Yeah, Swooper. Yeah.
And he's known traditionally, I've spoken to a lot of the Melbourne boys about it, that it was just not a lot of science to his coaching, but just gelled the team.
Yeah, he was a real just old school motivator.
Yeah.
You know, the game plans were simple back then, all these structures and stuff now. It was just, you know.
That'll be a member of Mensa to play AFL these days.
This is what I was going to ask. So your career included going from just enjoying playing your footy to science.
Yeah.
And probably the introduction of down the ground vision.
Yeah, all that sort of
was
stuff.
Was that fun?
Oh, I think I just might have missed the down the ground vision, thankfully.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't fun on a Monday. It was no good.
Really?
Because I didn't tackle much. And there's a good stat. In 1996, my best year ever as far as goal kicking went, kicked 91 goals. Had 6 tackles for the year. So I would have got caught out on down the ground.
Well, so you made a run at a Brownlow one year, famously towards the end of your career. And Swanee's saying is, what is it about Brownlow medalists? About the list of Brownlow winners with defensive.
Oh, yeah. Well, running, playing defensively doesn't win you Brownlows. It doesn't. Tackles and defensive running, never. No. Umpires don't go, fuck, he ran defensively well today. I'm going to give him 2 votes. Never happens.
They don't see that, do they? So Swooper was just old school. Yep. I remember one day we were playing Carlton, and he was he had this newspaper article pinned up on the board before the game. You know, and they used to use articles to motivate you and that sort of thing. And it was written by this guy called Tony DeBolfo. And we were playing Carlton. You remember Tony DeBolfo?
Yeah, Carlton, man.
And he was just ripping in Richmond are no good, this and that. And Swooper was smashing the board. And, you know, this bloke DeBolfo doesn't rate you guys, right? He doesn't rate you. And the last thing he said before we ran out on the ground, this is how many tactics we had. This was his motivation. He goes, this guy DeBolfo, he's nothing but a bloody pie scoffer. You know, right? Pie scoffer. I'm like, what is DeBolfo being a pie scoffer got to do with us winning games of footy? So anyway, about 2 years ago working in the media, I've worked in the media for 10 years, and Every ground that we go to, there's pie warmers in the media room, right?
Unfortunately.
And I do three games a weekend. So at halftime, if I'm not having five or six party pies every time, that's 18 party pies, 20 party pies a weekend. I'm a pie scoff now. So yeah, that was Swooper. Just anything to try and, you know, motivate you against anyone.
And then Wolsey?
Then Wolsey, who was, you know, pretty hard.
Brutal?
Sort of, brutal, yeah. Yeah, brutal. If you, and that's the thing about now, they treat players differently. You know, they've got to tiptoe around guys. Yeah, and cuddle them. No cuddling with Wolves.
And did that suit you or not suit you?
I didn't mind that. Yeah. I didn't mind a coach getting into me. It sort of got me up and about. That's what I said about my old man. I wouldn't mind it if he ripped into me occasionally.
Yeah,
I didn't mind it. Yeah.
And he at least had the street cred, which a lot of coaches now perhaps aren't great. Yeah. So in fact, that's a reality. A lot of coaches are more analytical. They've played 50 games or whatever, but Wolsey was a great as well.
Yeah, we coached a premiership. I remember, though, he hated we used to walk from Punt Road over to the G because we couldn't get the car parks at the G because they gave them all to the sponsors then. The players had to walk over the ground. Seriously. So we'd walk from Punt Road over to the G before a game. We'd have our team meeting at Punt Road. And we're walking over one day and a few of us had sunglasses on. I reckon this was in his first your second game, Wolsey, and he went off his absolute dial because we had sunglasses on. Imagine how he'd be with these haircuts now.
Oh, mate, it wouldn't be well. Yeah.
So, yeah, we learnt pretty early that he was a bit of a hard sort of bugger.
And that era, if you compare it to what Punt Road looks like now and the amount of money that's been spent there, that was – I remember walking down as a
– it was possum shit in there everywhere.
I mean, you could actually walk in during the day. Yeah. It was just it was unbelievable how the access and it was just an old shed, wasn't
it? It seriously was worse than – the Devonport Footy Club in Tassie when I got there. The rooms were worse. We had better facilities in Devonport, so it was pretty different.
And you went through that, Swanee, didn't you? The Vic Park, you were able to at least compare to Vic Park.
Yeah. Steve McKee got Legionnaires this season, the Spa. Really? Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so that's how good Vic Park was going.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
We had a spa. There was an old spa at Punt Road, and you'd walk in there on a Monday night, and it was foam all over the top of it.
I don't know what they old. I don't know what the old boys did. So I reckon they might have had a few gatherings back there after a game, and I'm not sure what was going on after hours in that joint. But
they'd still get in it though. All the old.
Oh yeah,
Monday night. Talk about the what happened on the way. That's what I missed. At the end of my career.
Storytelling in the spa.
Monday night in the showers, just recapping on the weekend. It wasn't the game.
Nothing to do with the footy. It was best on off it. But Vic, I didn't get a lot of Vic Park because I was playing at Willy. So back then, if you weren't playing in the ones or you weren't in the squad of 25, whatever, you got...
You had to train at Willy.
Yeah, so it was perfect for me. It was like Tuesday, Thursday nights, starting at 5 o'clock and you had to come in and do your weights on your own. Yeah, of course I was. Like there was no pin pad to see who was coming in. I was like, I did my weights, of course I fucking did. And then go down to Willy at like 5 o'clock where you got no coaches watching you, just Willy coaches. So, it was the kind of attitude I had. I was like, I'm getting away with murder here. So it's kind of what I was doing. But obviously we've got a fair complex down at the Holden Centre, whatever it's called now.
And your whole career was before camera phones were invented. Was that a great assistance to having a life?
I wouldn't mind going back to having no phones for a while. But mid-90s, you could, no phones, no worries. You generally played, if you were lucky, you might have played a Friday night. North Melbourne generally
had they were the best.
Didn't they? They had the lock on Friday.
Yeah.
But there might have been one Sunday game. Yep. The rest of the games were Saturday afternoon. So... was perfect. You could go out Saturday night and have a few beers, and then Sunday you'd go to the depot. And
did you have recovery or did you have Sundays off?
No recovery. Definitely not in my first 4 or 5 years. Yeah. So we wouldn't have to, we played Saturday arvo, we wouldn't have to train until 5 o'clock Monday.
That's good.
So you could go out Sunday night, have a rest all day Monday, get to training 5 Monday,
Cherry ripe.
Ready to go. Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
And you'd occasionally go out, watch, and I do know you would drink your waters, but you would go out and watch a band and be no big deal because there'd be no camera phones of people. Nah.
Well, you could go out during the week. Oh, no, I didn't go out and drink during the week, but I'd love a beer on the weekend. But, yeah, you could go out and do what you wanted. There was, I feel for the guys now with the social media. It's out of control, some of it.
Yeah, it's like a double-edged sword. It's positive because you can make revenue from it and you can build a brand and you can do all that, but on the other side, can't, because you can't do anything. So it's always tough for them, but it's one of those things. It's not going to get better before it gets worse. I wouldn't have thought.
And I guess they've been, brought up with it. So they might sort of be used to it, I guess.
Yeah.
Just to jump forward, we mentioned him before. So how do you see the dusty era of being a superstar and the attention that he gets as well?
Yeah, he's next level though, isn't he?
His level of celebrities.
Yeah.
Next level. And I think his management's done it well, and Dusty, and he's obviously a shy person unless you know him, but because he's so hard to get a hold of, when people do see him, it's like fucking the Beatles.
Yeah.
That's wild.
He's sort of built that sort of aura or stigma around himself without trying to.
It's just him.
He just doesn't want the publicity.
Yep.
But it's come back tenfold.
I know.
Yeah.
But it also hasn't really done him any favours in the past. And when you are that little bit of an enigma, people want to know more about you. It's like the less he's giving, the more people want to know. So if they see him out at a restaurant and he's just there with his friends and he doesn't want to talk, it's not like,
he's got to stop playing well.
He's brushing them off and people then say he's arrogant when he's not. He's just trying to eat his meal. But because he's so far removed, people want more. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
When they see you, they're like, mightn't get another chance type of thing.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. We must get this photo.
But I've found in Melbourne, I mean, you can generally do what you want. I can't talk for Dustin because clearly he's probably the most recognisable sportsman in Australia, I would say. So it would be hard for him, and I could see why he'd want to get away from that. But most footballers in Melbourne, you can live a pretty normal life. Yeah. I don't think there's any issues there.
No, you're pretty good.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Geesh era.
Geesh.
Jeff Geeshan.
I remember when Geesh took over as the caretaker, we won our last 4 games. We knocked Carlton out of the finals at Princess Park. We didn't play finals, but we had the chance to beat them and keep them out of finals, which we did. Obviously, the Richmond fans loved it. So there was no process that was – they just appointed Geesh. And he probably deserved it. We were responding to his message. And I remember walking into the ground that day and – the cheer squad was selling badges and everyone was buying them, Unleash the Geesh. Like the supporters wanted it. They were mad for him, right? So 18 months later, obviously things had turned pear-shaped at Richmond pretty quickly, as they did back in those days. And walking into the ground 18 months later, they're selling badges, Release the Geesh. True story, and he was released a few days later.
So then RIP, you had the Spud era. So tell us about the fun stuff of playing under Spud. And you played some great footy, but you also had some times where you went off the rails yourself on field.
Yeah. Spud was what you saw in the media, the way he, on the bounce, the shows that he did and his stuff on the radio, that was how he was at the club. He was great to be around, but he was serious when we needed to be, and he knew his footy. But you could have some fun with him. We loved – he used to train with us when we first got there, Spud. He used to do all the running.
How'd he move?
He was actually a good runner.
Was he?
Like aerobically, not obviously quick, not quick or anything.
Yep.
But he used to get out and do all that with us. And, we actually had a couple of good years, early days under Spud. Played in a prelim up in Brisbane in 2001. Who was going to beat them that year, that was good times. That was probably the most enjoyable time in footy that year with Danny,
So you owe me a beer from that era.
Yeah.
Which was when you got dropped.
Yeah.
Talk us through what happened to you. I'll tell the story.
It was my 150th game. It was a Friday night game, Richmond and Carlton, and I was actually captain that. It's the only time I was ever captain of the club. I think Wayne Campbell, Matty Knights and Wayne Campbell were captain, vice-captain, and they were both out injured, so I was appointed captain for the night. Mm. So I sort of wanted to perform well. Anyway, I didn't perform well. And I've completely lost my marbles. Like, it was like someone else overtook my body out on the ground. At one point, a player kicked it to me on the lead and it bounced in front of me. I just stopped. And almost like you sitting down as a kid, I just threw the toys out of the cot. And it looked really bad on TV. And I knew within – and we lost by 1 point, of course, right? So I got off the ground and Spud went off his dial at all of us. And he sort of didn't say anything to me, and it unnerved me because I thought if anyone was going to copper spray that night, it was going to be me. Yep. And then I get in my car. I was living in Fitzroy at the time, and you know, I jumped in my car and I was going up under the train bridge there to turn up into Fitzroy. And my phone rang and it was Spud. And he'd saved it up. Don't worry about that. I reckon by the time I got home, Fitzroy Street down near Johnson Street, near the old bull ring there, he hadn't stopped talking and yelling at me, right? And I pulled my car into the garage and the last thing he said to me was, and by the way, you dropped, you won't be playing next week. So I thought, I reckon I'm the first guy that's ever been dropped half an hour after a game on the phone. Right? So I got dropped. So my night as Richmond captain ended up being dropped. But then it got worse. I get to the club on the Monday and Spud goes, I've announced a press conference. I said, what for? He goes, you're going to tell the media you dropped this week. So I had to announce to the media that I was being dropped.
Was that comfortable for you?
No. Spud couldn't even do it. He made me drop myself.
Not only that, it was your debut as a captain. How many after debut captains have been dropped?
Probably none. And I was never captain again.
How was it in the twos?
Played out at Preston. Cramer Street, out in Preston. I didn't play very well. In
was
the
it
full
for Preston or how was the...
It was the Bull Ants.
Northern Bull Ants.
Northern. Right. Yeah, okay. I think, were they still Preston then? It was 2000, been, whenever it was.
Yeah.
And whoever the full back was for Preston, he was going to make a name for himself this day. All he wanted to do was wrestle me. Right? We spent most of the game wrestling in the goal square. And the Preston, you know, the grog squad behind the goals, they followed me from end to end. I didn't play well either.
And it was one of the pop players. Did you spray your own player? And was that player the nicest man in footy in David Roden?
Yeah. Every time I see D Rod now, I still want to apologise to him for it.
He's a good man, Davey Roden. Isn't
he's the best, isn't he? Not the bloke that deserved a spray.
So I helped out Sam on the Thursday afterwards because I said, you ended up taking over your slab because Sam ended up down the barrel of Camry. If I was Daddy for all, I would have congratulated Matthew Richardson for not putting up with that shit because if you were standing at full forward waiting for the ball to come down, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, don't think it helped you.
No, it didn't. It was funny. Looking back, me and Spud had a few laughs about that over the years.
Absolutely.
So the only time you've been dropped in your career?
I got dropped in my first year, actually. No, second year. Got dropped in my second year for Justin Murphy for his debut. So he came in, I got dropped, and he kicked five on debut against Essendon at Princess Park. Yeah, so I got dropped once for form. But you know what, Swanee, and this used to happen a bit back in the day. By the end of that year, in my first year, I didn't get selected till around 7 or 8 and I played 14 games, right? And I had bonuses in my contract at 5, 10, 15 and 20. So I just thought something there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then the next year I got dropped. I missed 2 games injured and I got dropped for 1 game. I played 19 games.
Yeah, mate, absolutely.
I swear I got dropped so they didn't have to pay that bonus.
Oh, there's nothing surer. Nothing surer. They're not bad footy clubs, are they? Yeah. And they recalculate the BNF. He's finished 10th. Well, hold on a second. Let's just don't think he was that good in round 9. Let's just drop a couple of votes and make him finish 11th.
They definitely did that back in 100%. Those days. Yeah.
Well, actually, on the plus side, though, during your era starting off, was the player managers. And you got involved with some of those. Was it Club 10? Were you part of that? Yeah, or were you on that side?
No, I was with Chicken, Nixon. Yeah. So you're playing, is he playing some games with him? Or
he's like
doing
like
some sporting.
Yeah, hosting the... Yeah. Hosting the day,
yeah. So Chicken was. Well, I didn't have a manager when I first come over. My old man just did it. We came over to a game and in the end of '92 because I knew I was coming to Richmond. I didn't have to wait for the draft, so we came over, watched a game. Richmond got done by 120 points by Adelaide. Scott Hodges kicked 10,
right?
And we went back to Punt Road and signed a 4-year deal. Like, what were we thinking? But it was for nothing. The base money, I think it was 10 grand base payment. So, yeah, did that. And then my next contract, we got Ricky on board. And Ricky was really good.
Yeah.
Really good manager, yeah.
But you probably and now the front park and bring up all those men for all seasons calendars and all those other things against you for
awesome
for those earns from back then.
Yeah, Club 10. I was embarrassed by that. I'd only played 2-3 years and Ricky goes, oh, we're going to put you in this Club 10 thing. I said, what's that all about? He goes, it's like a little marketing group with all the 10 best players in the game. I said, well, I'm not in the 10, but you mean the 10 best guys you've got on contract? And I was the worst player he had.
Who were the others?
Well, you had bloody Dunstall, Carey, Lockett, Ablett Sr.
No pressure.
I think Kernahan, Gavin Wanganeen. And then you got me, you'd played 15 games.
He was ahead of his time.
It was embarrassing.
Fantastic. And would you finish your career with Plough?
Yeah, with Terry. Yeah.
And what type of freedom did you get playing up and down the wing with that Brownlow run?
Yeah, well, I guess the one thing that taught me that year was I was struggling in the forward line the first three games, I reckon, of 2008. And Plough called me into his office on a Monday. I actually thought I was going to get dropped. That's how poor I was going, playing at full forward. And he said, mate, we need a favour. I said, well, I'm not getting dropped then.
That's not a favour. Because I've played 19 games.
Yeah.
We're going to announce a press conference and you're going to drop yourself.
Yeah. So I said, yeah, what do you want? He said, oh, what do you think about playing on the wing? I said, I don't, Terry, to be honest with you. I've never played there in my life. I said, why is that? And he said, oh, we've got Jack Riewoldt here now, blah, blah, blah. I think he's going to be a good player, you know. The boys come out of the middle, they're kicking it to you all the time. I said, yeah, that's not my fault, though. What can I do about that? I said, why don't I go back and just stand in the goal square? Jack can do all the hit-up sort of work up around the 50. If they don't kick it to him, I'll be the get-out kick in the square. I thought it was a good idea. I said, I can do that till I'm 40. I said, what do you think? And he said, oh, well, you can play for Coburg this week. So I said, I love the wing. And that was it. So I went up there and we flew over to Subiaco the first week. I had no idea what I was doing. Went and stood on the wing. No one sort of told me anything how to play there. It was just like, go up there.
Yep.
Dave Mundy actually was my opponent. He was only a bit young kid at the time. Shook his hand, never saw him for the rest of the day.
It's not bad playing up in the midfield, is it?
How good is this? I'm not joking. The first ball that came to me, I've grabbed it, look around, there's no one near me. You get it inside 50, normally you're under a bit of pressure. So, yeah, it worked out well because, you know, I was struggling a bit for speed at that point and just wandered up and down the wing.
So you provided one of the great Brownlow nights, even without winning, because you made that run. And it'd be fair to say, was it back in the days where you could have a few beers and you were
plenty of crownies. Mark Ricciuto, actually, this was a good tip, and I don't know, this wouldn't happen now, but I remember going to the Brownlow one night and I couldn't, you know, just there were no beers on the table, and every waiter that come round, sort of, I kept missing our table. I just couldn't get a beer for half the night. And I went out to the toilet at one point and I saw Mark Ricciuto out there. I said, mate, are you getting a drink at your table? He goes, mine's never been empty. I said, what happened? He said, mate, as soon as you get here, just whoever's the waiter on your table, just give him a pineapple. Your glass will be full all night. So the next year I did that, and that was that year. So I'd had plenty by the time there. It was good fun, though.
It is good. Fev fucked the Brownlow for everyone now.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah. The footy show shenanigans, he fucked it for everyone. Yeah. Now you, like, you don't get alcohol. Not that I've been in years, but like no alcohol on the table. So we used to take like hip flasks in.
Did you?
Yeah. Good by idea. The end of life vodka, and just I would just have like a Coke or a lemonade and just have your beer up. And then just top up with your flask, because thanks, Brendan.
My mum actually worked at Crown in the Palladium. Right, yeah. So I also got to know a few of the staff heads there. So that always makes sure. Whenever I was at a function at Crown, they looked after me after that. Still to this day, some of mum's mates in there. So just no functions there anymore.
Yeah, nah.
We had Darcy here a few weeks ago, and he spoke about being able to just enjoy the winners as a supporter, as a past player. And there was no, I wish I was there. It was just, I did my best and couldn't make it. Was that what you were like?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was a Richmond supporter as a kid, so I guess when I finished, I'd just click back into Nuffy Richmond supporter.
This is the point I wanted to get to, because you and Billy Brownless from my era, the two that... You just have no problems being a Nuffy.
Nah, happy to be a Nuffy.
I've heard you a couple of times when you've been calling the game, and your fellow commentators just kind of sit back and let you run when Richmond are doing something kind of special.
It's funny though, like you say that, but I get on Friday night when Richmond are getting pumped, I get Richmond supporters tweeting me going, "Oh, why are you trying to be biased to Melbourne, you're overcompensating. Like, so you can't win.
No, you can't.
You can't win.
People like to just have their 2 cents, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Anyway. I know you've told a few times, but so talk us through when you realise that you're had got the ISO on you when Richmond won the premiership, because it is a great story, and you did really well and truly be a nuffy that day.
Yeah,
and
it was. Fair enough, too. I didn't say much that day, but I guess. I think Lee Matthews always says you've got to be – your goal a minute you can get. So I think Butler kicked a goal. Richmond went 7 up with 6 minutes to go. So that I thought – I actually thought then they can't lose now. Mm. I can – as I thought that, I looked at the monitor, and Brendan Gale is a great mate of mine from Tassie as well, and obviously played together for a long time. And his brother Michael was there, who I played with as well, and they're great guys, the Gale brothers. And they had a bit of an embrace, and I saw them sort of tearing up a bit. And then I – sort of sat back and couldn't help it. It just started coming. And then I thought of my old man who passed away a few years before that. And Dad was crook towards the end of his life. And all he ever looked forward to was the footy. That was his one thing. And I thought, geez, he would have loved this. And then, it just all happened. But it was a good night that night. It was a good night.
Just had a few good nights since with the Tigers.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. But, it is hard. I don't like doing Richmond games. It is a bit hard.
Would Benny have given you the gig to present the cup?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
How'd that come about?
I work at the club, as I said, doing the potty, and I was in there doing the potty on a Monday, and it was before the prelim, before the GWS game, and I got a phone call on my mobile. It was Brendan. He said, can you come to my office? And I'm like, this is a bit weird. Like, it's over.
I'm getting dropped.
I've been working here for 8 years since I retired, Swanee, and they've finally gone out of there, mate. So I went in there and he explained the reasons, and, you know, each club's got to nominate someone to present the cup. He said, you know, we'd like to nominate you. And I said, that's awesome. He said, don't tell anyone yet. And I said, right. I thought I wouldn't mind ringing my mum and telling her. You know, she'd be thrilled. And I walked out of his office and I thought, hang on, we haven't even beaten GWS in the prelim yet. That's how early they nominated it. So, I had to keep it under my hat for a week. But, that was pretty cool. It's good fun.
Fantastic.
I didn't do a Bobby Davis. So, remember Bobby wouldn't let go of the cup when Geelong won in 2009?
You think they're a chance this year?
They've just got to hang in there, I reckon, Swanee. Mm. Yeah, Dusty's out now for a week or two and got a few injuries. So, I reckon if they can hang 50-50 for the next month,
it'd be hard to beat in the MCG in September.
Yeah, and they can get a run on. But I've learnt one thing in footy. You don't make big calls this time of year. I reckon it's pretty hard.
All right,
there's a lot of them, though.
I was going to say, man, that's what everyone in the media does. Yeah.
When do you have to go, at 12?
Yeah.
We've got 10 minutes?
Yeah.
All right, we've got some listener questions here. From Lee, nice to see you back at the Holden Centre, Dane. Guest request, EJ Maguire.
Pardon?
Can we get Eddie into the pod?
Well, can I? I'm having breakfast with him next Thursday, I think, so I'll ask.
Is it true Dan Connors spilled a bottle of red on Eddie?
Not a whole bottle.
I would have loved to have been there.
Not a whole bottle, but yeah. And Ed picked up the bill too, so. Yeah. Are you doing your one-on-one with him yet?
I haven't done it yet.
No.
I'm a bit worried. He's put a bit of bulk on, hasn't he?
What's the better game?
He's enlarged.
I've always said that Dan Connors, a mate of ours, and played at Richmond and mate of Swanies. He's playing with you at St Kilda.
Well, he's meant to be.
He hasn't turned up.
I haven't seen him once yet.
Is that right?
I actually spoke to him before. I said, mate, so I'm not playing this week. I'm in Adelaide. And I said, next week, surely. Every Tuesday or Thursday, today's the day.
Right.
The Pied Piper, here he comes. He's not yet, man. I'm getting myself right. Not yet. But he promises me he's coming down.
Well, he reckons he could outmark me. And, like, seriously, DC, you're not a bad player.
I'm Matthew Richardson.
I said, mate, someone could kick 100 balls up in the air and you're not marking one of them.
Yeah.
And he reckons he could. So we'll do it one day. Sorry.
Actually, what about math science, though, Dane?
Yeah, well...
Dane's got this theory: the closer you are to a loss after winning a lot, or vice versa.
No, that's true. And I'm 46. So.
from Trisha, Samantha, will you go back on field at Melbourne Storm games? You were amazing.
It's very kind. I actually am not famous enough. Apparently, they just rejigged their on-field presenters, and I didn't make the cut after 8 years.
You become a required presenter.
I'm a required presenter at the Melbourne Storm, but I would love to go back. If they could just run that up the flagpole, that'd be great.
That's from our old mate Scotty Cummings, who became a required player at four different clubs. So
I'm a required presenter.
From Nazi, Dane, will you be wanting little Tate to follow in your footsteps in terms of AFL? Should he pick it up?
He's 10 weeks old, so let's just give him a sec. But if he wants to, why not? If he wants to play footy, will you let your girls play?
Yeah,
father, father, do. Daughter, whatever
yeah,
it is.
Father,
yeah,
daughter. Yeah. Well, a lot of girls are playing now, aren't they? It's really, really taken off. AFLW. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, because that we're talking off air. At least if he's gonna play for teammates, he's gonna be okay. So that means by year seven, he can get a free scholarship to school somewhere because apparently schools aren't cheap these days.
Is
so
that, is that your number one concern? Now yes. You've got a kid?
Yeah. Just how expensive they are.
Outrageous,
mate.
Yes.
Mate, you're buying them clothes that they last for in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I was like, Taylor, why'd you buy fucking 40 tops? And it's like, they don't fit him anymore.
You just got to go to Kmart.
Got that snoo thing. It's nearly out of that now. He's 10 weeks old. It's like, mate, what's going on? But yeah, I'd love to see him play Collingwood, but I'm not going to drag him down to the footy oval if he doesn't want to.
Is your niece going well?
Gabby, yeah. She's, I think, Oakley going well. Oh, yeah,
good stuff. Is Swanee applying for the vacant coaching job at Collingwood?
The vacant, well, they you know something that I don't. Mate, who'd want to be a coach?
No, never.
Well, you could not. Well, you could pay me enough. There's obviously a sum there, but it'd be double or triple what any coach is getting paid now.
You'd be an assistant, though, I reckon.
Yeah, or mate, Wayne Carey, the Duck had the greatest gig at Collingwood. It was on 100 grand a year. I reckon I sent him four times in the year. Mate, he'd come down on a Tuesday, just pop in and just swagger through the club, go out on the track, come out on the track, get a brand new pair of Adidas or something like that, and then walk out.
What was his role? What?
I was a
goal kicking or something.
Forward coach or something like that. But he had fuck all to do. Like, I reckon he was meant to work with Trav on his mind. I reckon Trav seen him four times that year. So, a specialist coach who potters down there 1 day or 2 days a week, I could do, but. Being a head coach, mate.
Yeah, no
Who'd
chance.
Want to do that?
No chance.
No chance.
From Yoni, advice for new members of a Rat Pack when you miss showing up for work after a blinder.
Yeah, that happened to me. Yes, that happened to me Sunday.
Oh,
dear. I got a radio gig just every Monday morning, and I missed it.
Oh, no. Once a week.
He's buried the lead.
Yeah, that was in the news. So okay. Yeah, so I figured.
Did
yeah.
they reprimanded you or?
Well, I rang. Well, I rang him, so I was, mate, and I completely blame myself for signing a contract saying I have to be in, like, it's anywhere from, like, 7 to 8.30 on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
Like, in Goodwood Street in Richmond.
Yeah.
And Anzac Day, obviously, great day, sports bet box. So I really fulfilled my commitments to the sports bet box, and I hadn't been to the bar in a while, so I was like, caught up with a couple of boys. Let's go to the Albion. So I got to the Albion and
things escalated.
Oh, mate, it's a death. It's a trap. I can't just go for one.
No, never.
Like, especially when you I'm just going to see the boys. I'm just going for one. So yeah, righto. And then, so
have you ever just had one? It doesn't happen, is it?
You fell for water or not?
It's amazing. Nothing. But it's amazing then how your brain computes. So righto, if I leave in an hour, I'll have 6 hours sleep, and then I'll be able to get. Then that hour comes up, and you go, fuck, I can have 5 hours sleep. I'm sure of it. I reckon I was going to have to go straight through here.
Yeah.
Well, that's the best bet. So I'm going to have to hang around and I get home and I legitimately set my – they rang me on the Sunday during the day. Like, listen, mate, we know you're having a few – we'll come in at 8.30. Like, so they give me an extra hour and a half. Mate, straight – power. I set my alarm for 7.45. I must get home. I was obviously out and had a couple and had a couple. And I woke up about 10 to 9. Fucking missed calls. In a huge pain, I said, oh, fuck, sorry, listen, I'm coming tomorrow, I'll get it. So they got me on the phone for like 2 minutes, like at 5 to 9. And hey, listen, but it made the news, so I guess
that's so they probably, got their publicity.
Content for them.
You
so
did it to help them.
You listen, need to do what Mick Malloy does. He's got, oh in he's his, got yeah, when he was that. Doing Breakfast Radio, yeah. He had four RDOs a year.
Yeah,
that's
but 10.
Ten
mulligans.
But he doesn't have to. You don't have to ring in. You just don't turn up. It's your radio.
Could you imagine if I
got to get a lot funnier, I guess, and a lot better.
If I did what Dane did though, and just like rang up at 9:15, I'm like, oh, fuck, sorry.
For what?
Do you reckon I'd? I would still have a gig the next week. Anyway.
It's a fair point you make.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But have you still got a job?
Well, I don't know. They haven't called me. I haven't spoke to them since. But I'd imagine. I'll be there next Monday. Listen, if I'm not, I'm not. Listen, Kiss FM are fantastic people, but Listen, I'll put my hand up. Listen, you know, credit to me for putting my hand up and say I made a mistake.
Exactly. And you know what? You haven't tried to come up with some ridiculous excuse.
Exactly. It was what it was. I told him I was Anzac Day. I was falling in.
Yeah.
And you know what else I blame? Why didn't we have a public holiday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the, it would have been a public holiday Monday. We wouldn't have radio. Had radio Tuesday.
Yeah.
Would have done it yesterday. No problem. So I blame the Vic government.
Mm. It's only us in New South that don't have it.
Absolutely.
Are you a political animal like Dane became last year?
Oh, I became more of one.
Yeah.
Really got in the trenches on Twitter.
It's a wild world, political Twitter. Yeah.
Don't they come for you?
Oh, my goodness. They're nasty. They're nasty. And I've never understood politics. Like, as if where they hang on the right or left, as if you believe absolutely everything everyone says on. Surely people have opinions.
You should be able to swing vote. Exactly. You should be able to swing vote.
Well, they're nasty. They're nasty.
So you're both from Wes Wharf. Selfie or autograph?
Autograph.
Yeah, autograph.
Quicker. And
just sometimes you're not in the state.
You haven't done your hair.
Yeah, it could be. You might have just woken up or you've had a couple and you stop. Autograph takes a second. Yeah. Selfie, you have to. And sometimes I go, can you take it because you're taller and you've got longer arms? Fucking stick a broom up my ass and sweep the floor while I'm going.
How many people don't know how to work these phones still?
As soon as you say yes, they're like, fuck, hang on, how do I work this?
You shouldn't have them.
But I will say about Dave.
It would be like a driving course. If you can't operate them, you shouldn't be allowed to have one.
I've not seen him turn one down, though. I've been to the Albion a couple of times where and he's come over to say hello or can I get a drink or whatever. And even in that short space of that one sentence that he's offered me, three or four people have asked for a conversation, a selfie, and he'll go, Sam, can I get...
Man of the people.
Can I just... And he'll pause without even
you
gotta
hesitating. You've got to do it in your own genius.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's never a no from Dane. He's a man of the people.
Absolutely.
We'll finish with this. Jakey for the win to you both. Best punches you've seen thrown at a boxing bag, toughest player?
Gee. I'll tell you who was really quick was Andy Cracker.
Yeah, I was going to say Crack was pretty smooth at Elk because he was a Collingwood, obviously.
Yeah. I wouldn't. Yeah, he'd have one on your chin.
Was Greg Staff at the meeting?
Staff was nasty, and it had a bit of weight behind him. Big Staff. Nathan Brown's a little cream puff. You know what? I heard a whisper he may have been offered one of those celebrity fights against an NRL player. You as well?
In the back end of the year, but
I said to Brownie, "Don't do it.
Have you stupid. Not enough money on earth."
Yeah.
Have you? We'll finish with this topic because Dane obviously has done it. Have you been avoided the reality TV thing, or what have they roped you into? In
Seven asked us to do the full Monty one a couple of years ago, but it was clashing with the footy, so I couldn't do it.
That's a shame, yeah.
And you avoided Dancing with the Stars and all those
other
things?
Yes, avoided all
of that. Is there one you'd like to do?
You know what I'd like to do? The Amazing Race.
Yeah.
I like travelling, and I think I feel like I'm good at logistics. Like when we travel, it's always me with the maps and doing all that stuff.
The itineraries and
The itineraries. Yeah,
that's not a bad one because you don't need like a skill per se. Like you don't come across as like a fuckwit.
Yeah,
on some other reality shows.
You're just doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that'd be all right.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming. I'm claiming one thing with you, though, is that before I became a required producer at 3AW, Louis Blitzis, the Lord Mayor of Middle Park, one of the mad Richmond supporters, we got him and his mates into the footy show one day singing Richo, Richo, Man. And when I went to 3AW, I said to Rex, this is for you. And how good is Rex?
Rexy loved it.
Was that
Louis Blitzis started that, did he?
Louis Blitzis and his mates started that. And, the Tiger Army are just psychotic.
They would have thought that up after a very late night at the Middle Park
Hotel. That's it. So good stuff. Mate, appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks very guys. Much.
Great Matthew Richardson on Swatty and Friends.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.